Today I'm going to be talking about the soul. We're doing a journey through some of the highlights of the Science of Mind textbook this year. This is the edition many of you see if you take a foundations class or any of the other certificated Science of Mind classes. You'll be using that textbook. And one of the topics this year as a subtopic to the Magic of Homes is spirit, soul, and body. And I'm going to be talking about the soul today. And I have to preface this by saying that soul for me has been one of the more difficult topics to comprehend. Another word for soul in the textbook is the subjective mind. And as soon as I heard the subjective mind, my mind usually shut off. So I started kicking myself because I'm the one that schedules the talks here, and I'm thinking, why did I give myself this topic? So I learned a lot, and I must have really started getting it, because I noticed the past few days I've had some really odd synchronicities with Connie. And I would think something, and she would write something almost instantaneously. And so I knew that I was somehow getting the topic of soul. Soul is part of the triune nature of God, as religious science calls it. It's triune, meaning three-part, or what other people would call the Holy Trinity. And continuing on the Holy Trinity lines, the soul is the Holy Ghost. And as I go through this talk, I'm going to be reading you some definitions verbatim from the Science of Mind textbook so that you get even more a flavor of what this is. Because most of us, when we think of soul, we think of the part of us that never dies, that has always existed, and that when we leave our bodies, we'll remain in the non-physical world. And that's kind of part of what it is, but it's not the whole thing. So I want you to listen carefully to Holmes's definition of the word soul. He says it's the creative medium of spirit, the subjective side of life, the mirror of mind, for it reflects the forms of thought that are given it. Man's soul life reenacts the soul life of the universe. Soul is subjective because it takes the thought of the conscious mind and it acts upon it. Its nature is subjective and it cannot analyze or reject. It can only carry out the orders that are given to it. It's infinite in its power and ability to do, but knowing that it does. So our soul reflects all of the images that we put in there. Images can be words, it can be pictures. So one of the things that you'll hear a lot when we talk about soul is the concept of the seed. I want to back up a little bit and take you to this sheet of paper, which has all of the definitions of soul that appear in the Science of Mind textbook. When you look at, and I'm sorry to keep going back into this book for those that are listening from the internet, but the part of the textbook that has the diagrams of what we call our teaching symbol, I have given you here three different descriptions. But I took it from the 1926 edition, which is my personal favorite edition, because what it does is for each one of these things on the list, the descriptions, it will give you a definition. So it's pretty clear by the end of it what Holmes means by soul. So if you look down this list, I think you can see a pattern here that a lot of it, it's not the active part. It's not the part, when you see the Science of Mind symbol with the descent of spirit, it's the part that just hangs out there in the middle. And it's sometimes referred to as the law. It's sometimes referred to as creative medium. But it's sitting there, and it's in a receptive mode all the time. So it's not out there doing. And I thought, well, that was kind of hard to get until I started subtracting other pieces of the whole, which is spirit, or our thought, or the conscious mind, and matter, which is the lower part of our teaching symbol, which is the physical effects that we have in the world, all our the tables, pita, friendship, all the things. So what you have in the middle is the things that make all the that translate the thoughts into the physical items. So one of the terms for the soul is the subjective mind, meaning that when something is subject to another, it means it is kind of in a it's in a passive role. Things are done to it. It's not out there doing things. And Holmes refers to the subjective mind as beneath the threshold of consciousness. It's the inner side, the subconscious, and it's under the direction of the conscious mind. So it's everything that's not in the physical world, and it's not thought. And when we have classes in religious science, particularly the foundations class, I don't know about the new curriculum, but they often refer to planting a seed with our thought. And you hear that over and over again. In fact, it comes up some in the textbook as well. And as you know, when you plant a seed in the ground, you always get what you plant. So in other words, if I decide I'm going to plant collard greens today, I'm not going to be getting green beans. And it's the same with a creative medium. It doesn't sit there and make a judgment as to whether or not you should really be planting green beans or corn, perhaps. It will simply give you the results of the seed that you have planted. And so one of the seeds that we have that we use on a regular basis, and I think all of you can relate to it, is something called an affirmation. And an affirmation is, you can compare it to a seed. A lot of times you'll plant a seed and it's a dud, and it didn't go anyplace. But if you have a seed with some life in it, it does go someplace. It becomes a full-blown plant. And so it is with our thoughts. When they're congruent with our belief system, with our feelings, with our intellect, we produce results. So In following that thread on planting seeds and how to make them grow a little bit, we need to be specific. We need to plant the seeds that we envision. And as we're doing that, we need to understand that we're using the law in science of mind, the law of the universe. You see it, the term used over and over again in our textbooks. It's basically the creative medium. So when I speak my word, when I affirm something, I know, because I know that the law works, I know that what I plant always results in something, I connect the law with what I'm doing. And I speak in the present tense, and I have an example I can give you. This is for me as a practitioner. I have a service to render. My business is to be a practitioner. Whoever needs my service, whomever I can particularly and personally benefit, those whom I can particularly aid in this art are irresistibly drawn to me now, today, at this moment. And a statement like that, I took that straight out of one of Holmes' books. A statement like that I like because I do have some feeling when I say it. I'm not just affirming something like all is well, which has, it's kind of flat for me if I say that right now. But if I say something like, I'm a great practitioner, I attract the right people to me, I have a really exciting practice. I enjoy getting up in the morning and giving talks. I enjoy preparing for talks. All of those things I say, and I can feel my feeling in it. I know that I am planting seeds that are growing. The other thing you need to know when we're talking about the law is that the law also, it takes many forms. So one of the things the law does is if you plant something in there with the intention to harm another person, frequently it can come back to you. So you need to be very selective about what you want to plant. And recently I went through a several month phase of being really unhappy at work, knowing something was wrong, not knowing what it was, hating going in, losing sleep at night, starting to have anxiety over my job, and just feeling like I wasn't where I wanted to be and not knowing what to do about it. So finally it reached a point where I realized I was at a crisis point and I needed to do something. Not that I was going to lose my job, but I started thinking that perhaps my issue was that I was in the wrong place. And so instead of focusing on I'm on the wrong place, I started thinking about things I would like to do. And within a few days, I talked to a friend who told me about a wonderful program at George Mason on conflict resolution. And within a month or so, I was accepted into the program. And I love the program. I really like the reading that we're doing, and I feel like it's a good fit for where I am in life and gives me an opportunity when I leave the federal government to do something exciting that combines both my skills in program management and also my skills as a practitioner. And I can go out and do things in other places in the world besides the United States Navy. And so I was excited, and I also got a new job at the same time. I went into the senior executive in our organization, and I said, you know, I think I'm not really fitting in right now. And within a month, she had me transferred out, and so I'm actually going to stay there now. It was a rotational assignment. So what I'm saying is I didn't focus on what wasn't working. I focused on what I wanted to do next, and I started being open to new ideas. And slowly things began to change. If I had spent my time worrying about the job that I once had and being upset about it, I don't know where it would have gone, but I do know from past history that a lot of times what feels like a crisis impending becomes a crisis the more you focus on it. So I was very selective about what I was planting. I'd go into work every day and I would say, I have a reason for being here. I have gifts that need to be shared with the universe. There are things I can do that are unique that no one else can do. And I would say this every day. I would go into the bathroom, which is about my only sanctuary at work, is to go into the bathroom. And I would do my affirmations. I would talk about how wonderful it was to feel like my skills were being used and that I was making a real difference in the world. And so I was planting a lot of seeds, and I was being selective, and I was also in the middle of a crisis. And I refused to deal with the crisis. I dealt with the things that I wanted. So the last item when we're talking about the affirmations and using the soul and planting our seeds is to have faith that knowing that whatever seeds you are planting eventually result in a plant or an equivalent condition. And this is like the essence of our teaching. And I know that we keep going through this over and over again, but I get excited about it. So next, I wanted to talk a little bit about the other aspect. Besides the creative medium, there is the essence of what we call the mind, or one mind, or the universal mind, or universal subjective mind. And here's Holmes's definition. He says, no one's ever seen the mind or spirit. The only proof we have of mind is that we can think. But we're perfectly justified in believing that we have a mind. Actually, there's no such thing as your mind, or my mind, or his mind, or her mind, or God's mind. There's just one mind. And it's this mind in which we live, we move, and we have our being. Mind is both conscious and subconscious. Conscious mind is spirit, either in God or man. Unconscious mind is the law of the conscious mind acting and is, therefore, subconscious or subjective. Mind is potential energy, while thought is a dynamic force which produces the activity for manifestation. The one mind is all of truth. Our mind, that point in God consciousness which we call our mind, is as much of the truth as we will allow to flow through and to bless us. And that was taken straight from the glossary at the back of the Science of Mind textbook. So what we call your subjective mind and my subjective mind are really just one big mind, like a big stew or something like that. And there are differences between us because I'm different from David and different from Valerie and Bethany and Michael and Siobhan, et cetera, et cetera. We're all different, but yet we're not separate in any way. We are all somehow connected. That when I think of David or when I think of Valerie, that I can feel their essence. And so one of the questions you may have about how does treatment work is that there is no difference between, say, you and me other than we're individual expressions. So, for instance, I know that Kate is in the hospital right now. I know that Kate would like some treatment. And so she's open and she's receptive to our praying for her. And so when we think of Kate, we are actually calling into the, we're dealing with that one mind, the universal mind, And she is there, she's there within us right now as we do that. And so there is no space, no time, nothing that divides us from Kate. And we can see her as healthy. We can see her as attracting physicians that help her out and the treatments that she can respond to. And we also see her as being surrounded by love. And that becomes really easy when you sit down and you actually do that. And so we know that Kate's being is also at the center of our individual beings. And therefore, the mental work that we're doing, we're praying, we're doing treatments, is being done for Kate, for you, for anybody that we're or condition that we're treating for by using the law. So that's the second aspect of soul, the first being the planting of the seed, the second being that there's only one mind. And the part that I find fascinating about this mind is that there was never a moment when it didn't exist, but somehow every time you think a thought, you're adding more into this mind. And so I think of this as like the infinite hard drive that just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding, but it is. And if it weren't for each one of us here, it wouldn't be expanding. So mm-hmm. you're doing your job by thinking, by planting your seeds. And it's just a matter of how you use it and to remind yourself that the law will obey our words and it's the servant of our spirit. So what I'm trying to do right now, we're going to be ending a little early for the first half and taking our break because I wanted to spend a lot of time on doing some personal visioning. And so what I'm going to do now is close with a prayer that Holmes wrote. And I don't know if you've ever read in some of his books, he's got some prayers that are just incredible. And this is one that really attracted me because it really speaks to me and I could feel it resonate within, and it talks about the soul. I am surrounded by an infinite intelligence which reacts to my thought. I realize that the creative power of this divine intelligence is with me now. And I know that I'm using this power and that my word operating through it will cause it to bring into my experience the good which I desire. Believing in divine guidance, I know that my mind is continuously impressed with the images of right action. I know that everything in my life is controlled by the action of truth and love. I am led, I am guided, and I am inspired by the living spirit. I am compelled to move in the right direction. And I always know what to do and how to do it. I know that inwardly I am spiritually perfect. I have complete happiness and I experience an abundance of good. Happiness and success rightfully belong to me. I am successful in all of my undertakings. And so it is. And that's all she wrote.
Thank you.